Hello, everyone, and welcome into CrushTheStreet.com. I am Kenneth Amendurie, and quite the week we have. And we got a brand new, very interesting guest on the line. I'm super grateful for Ryan Scribner coming on the line with me. He's with InvestingSimple.com. You know, he covers personal finance, entrepreneurship, stocks. He's really an all-around success story, and he's written books, and he's even got an academy for everyone. He's absolutely going viral on the internet. So it's going to be a real treat to pick his brain today to get an idea of what is going on in the economy. So without any further ado, Ryan, thanks for coming on Crush the Street with me today.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, Kenneth. Thanks for having me on. I'm happy to talk and share anything that you want to learn about, you know, business or stocks or any of the above. Happy to talk about it.
Well, appreciate that. If you would, give us a little background on yourself. What led you to where you are today and obviously the success that's unfolding in front of you? Give us a little background as to what led up to this.
Yeah, definitely. I'll give you sort of a synopsis here, a short version of it here, because I could go on for a much longer story. But essentially, you know, I had a similar story to most people who get into some kind of online business venture where I was working the 9-to-5 job, wasn't super passionate about what I was doing. And I pretty much started a YouTube channel as a little side hobby because I was big into investing. I figured it would be kind of a cool way to share my knowledge about the stock market and maybe share some stock ideas or here's what I'm doing, you know, investment wise. And the channel ended up taking off in a relatively short period of time. And it kind of got to the point where I was at this crossroads where I said, well, okay, I can continue working this job that I'm not passionate about and that I don't really have much interest in, or I have this potentially infinitely scalable business where I can build up a following, build up this YouTube channel, and leverage different ways of making money. So that was back in 2016. I started the channel, went full-time in 2017. And then, as you mentioned, I'm 50% owner of InvestingSimple.com. I have a business partner with that. And that is something we started in 2018 because I had pretty much maximized my reach as far as YouTube goes in terms of investing, personal finance, and topics like that. And I realized there was just so much opportunity with Google search as well and with blogging to, you know, expand my reach. So now I'm pretty much almost 50-50 in terms of my focus on my YouTube channel, as well as the blog, Investing Simple, which is, you know, a personal finance investing related blog. And in terms of the business, I leverage affiliate marketing to derive revenue. That's pretty much the main component, which is essentially making money from referrals for different brokerage accounts. And I also derive money from the ad revenue. And then you mentioned as well, I do have a couple of educational programs. I also have, you know, free ebooks related to some of these investment platforms or money-making ventures. So yeah, I pretty much cover a wide spread of things here. Investing, I talk about my own investments, I talk about different money-making ideas, and I also, you know, give people a peek behind the curtains of, you know, what it's like to earn mostly passive income from these online platforms.
So, Ryan, it's an interesting dynamic right now. We were kind of briefly chatting about what's going on with the markets, and really the lifestyle right now with the virus and what's going on around the world. I mean, what a shock. And I got to ask you, you know, what is your take on what we're seeing right now in 2020 as a world? I mean, you know, maybe from an economic perspective or just a societal perspective, is this something we're going to be talking about 100 years from now?
Yeah, I honestly think what we're experiencing here is like the 50-year pandemic. I mean, I know there was a large pandemic in the 1950s that kind of had a similar response to this, and it had a massive impact on the economy. So between the pandemic as well as the protests and rioting going on, I think 2020 is going to be like a year in history that people talk about. It's going to be one of those 20 or 30 years from now, it'll be a question in a history test about, you know, what happened in 2020. I really think that. But the main thing as far as the investing side goes is at least the first half of 2020, not so much right now, the first half of 2020 is the most excited I've been about investing in my entire investing career. So I really only started investing back in 2015. I'm only 25 now, so I'm not very old. So obviously 2008 stock market crash, I wasn't old enough to invest. I didn't have any money to get into the market anyway. So that's the first real opportunity that I've seen to get into the market with sizable positions and honestly buy companies at fractions of their valuation. So right now, I think the market is back to being fairly valued, if not overvalued, based on lower future earnings. But for those who, I know hindsight is 20/20, but for those who did scoop up stocks a couple of months ago, I mean, there were some wild opportunities, things that I've never seen before.
Ryan, I got to ask you, is with what's going on economically, the way the economy is just being supported by the Fed printing. I mean, I'm looking at a chart here of, you know, the GDP of the US to the total market cap of the stock market. And the stock market just becomes, it's becoming a larger and larger and larger percentage of GDP. And, you know, I'm just wondering, what are your thoughts on this? As, you know, we get more and more financialized and dependent on stocks, you know, with ultra low interest rates and, you know, Fed money printing. I mean, what do we see going forward here? Is this volatility in the markets? Is this a new normal of boom and bust?
Yeah, I mean, it's honestly really hard to say, but I mean, I have a couple of things I want to mention on that. First of all, something that I read that really resonated with me trying to like make sense of the market is that the stock market is no longer an indicator of the underlying economy, which I think is totally true. And that's what we're seeing now, because if you look at the underlying economy, we have record high unemployment, a lot of uncertainty in terms of how many people are going to go back to jobs when the world reopens. Yet the stock market, the NASDAQ today, you know, is back to all-time highs. It doesn't really make sense that we have this deviation. But when you consider the fact that commission-free trading apps like Robinhood have literally opened up the floodgates in terms of retail investors, you have so many new market participants that weren't here 10, 15 years ago that it almost makes sense that with all this buying, it's propping up the market with all the federal money flooding into the economy. And also, not to mention, a lot of people did not spend their stimulus checks. They saved it or they invested it. So this stimulus package, which was meant to have people spending this money, turned into, oh, I'm going to put my money in Robinhood, or okay, I'm going to put my money in my savings account. And so I just think between the stimulus packages going out to businesses and also the money being sent directly to people and just the lowest barriers ever to the stock market, you have this deviation now where the stock market doesn't really make any sense anymore. But I don't have any reason to believe that, you know, that means that going forward, the stock market is going to be flat, or it will likely be more volatile. But it's just something, it's kind of an unprecedented time here with investing.
So having said that, though, how do you navigate this? I mean, what are you telling people? You know, look at Warren Buffett, for example. I mean, he's kind of looking like an amateur in the immediate snapshot right now, right? Selling his airline companies at pretty low valuations and then watching everything recover, you know, buying higher, selling low, and then watching things recover. What do you make of this? I mean, the most successful investor in the world is, you know, kind of looking bad at the moment.
My opinion here is that this stock market that we're seeing today is not the stock market that Warren Buffett or these large investors are used to. And one of the things that I think about, and even myself, I was wrong about this too. A couple of years ago, I talked about what are the companies out there with record high valuations that are just going to crash when the stock market tanks. And I said Amazon, you know, and I said Microsoft and some of these market high flyers and Netflix. And I said, I really think, you know, based on these record high valuations and high forward PEs, they just have to tumble. Yet when we've seen the first crash in you know, the last decade, those shares held up better than most of the value plays. And so I think I was totally wrong about that, as were a lot of people. So I think it's just the fact that this market is not something that anyone out there is used to or anything we have seen before. So Warren Buffett and these larger investors are still following their same strategies of looking at the company fundamentals and investing based on value rather than speculation or hype. But I just don't feel that these companies trade based on those valuations anymore. I mean, for example's sake here, we look at Nikola Motors, which is one that I talked about on my channel, the Vecto IQ reverse merger. And there you have a company with, I think their valuation is over $10 billion pre-revenue. And that's something that you would just not see back in the era of, you know, the heyday of, you know, Warren Buffett investing. But now you're seeing companies being valued based on the hype and the new technology that they're working on and things like, you know, impressions and views. And it's less about, you know, earnings and revenue and things like that. And so I think when you're trying to invest based on those old principles that of value investing that really made sense, at least right now, that is not what is winning out right now. And as much as people tried to say, okay, tech is overvalued, well, tech held up better than these value investments in this recent crash. And now we're back to, you know, all-time highs with the NASDAQ and with a lot of stocks like Apple and Amazon and those big names that so many people, including myself, you know, said we thought were overvalued.
What a crazy world. And it feels like a casino in a sense, because we have to take greater risk because of these unknowns. It's not even the experts in many ways, like Warren Buffett, is seemingly confused. How does the next 10 years, you know, how do you expect this to play out? Does it just continue to get more and more disconnected from the fundamental economy? I mean, we have millions of people in the U.S. unemployed still. I mean, we're just coming back a little bit, but largely unemployed. And the market is basically back to where it was. I mean, the NASDAQ, for instance, is at new all-time highs, but back to where it was pre-coronavirus. But the underlying fundamentals are arguably much worse than they were pre-coronavirus. So what are your thoughts on this?
And the other thing that I think is important to mention here too, because I read this as well, and it was like, okay, that makes a lot of sense. The market's actually more overvalued than it was before, because if you look at the forward PE based on lower future earnings because of the coronavirus and the pandemic that happened, companies are going to earn less money in 2020. So they're actually more highly valued than they were before this pandemic, because that was based on a higher future earnings. So if you adjust it for the future earnings of these companies, they're actually more overvalued now than they were pre-pandemic. So the way that I think about this is this, you know, I have no idea what's going to happen with the stock market. Nobody does. Clearly Warren Buffett doesn't. None of these hedge fund, you know, managers have any clue. But I think about this. We have record low interest rates. If I put my money, you know, in Ally Bank or any of these online savings accounts, I'm going to earn 0.0%, 0.01%, or maybe, okay, at most half of, you know, 0.5% right now, not keeping up with inflation. So I say, okay, I have to do something with my money. So what I'm personally excited about right now is dividend investing, because no matter what, I still have the option there to earn money through dividends as well as that asset appreciation. So value investing hasn't really done well in this market, but I still think that there's good opportunities there in terms of picking up blue chips, looking at those dividend aristocrats. And that's personally where I put a lot of money in early 2020. But in terms of the market, I'm also very bullish on tech right now. After seeing the way tech held up in this recent crash, I heavily invested into, you know, Apple and Amazon and a couple of those tech names, because they've really proven their staying power now in the market. And all of us, including myself, saying, oh, they're overvalued, overhyped, they're going to crash. Well, you know what? They didn't. They held up better than the overall market.
Yeah. I mean, on a side note, it's amazing what we saw with Zoom, Spotify, right? The $100 million deal that was made with Joe Rogan really set the market for what a podcaster could make, right? You know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Obviously, he's on another level than any one of us. But, you know, the Spotify brand, you know, market valuation on that news went up $5 billion. Just on that, in the middle of the pandemic, you know, it's just crazy what's going on right now. despite what Main Street is feeling. That's just what blows my mind is, you know, we have such a disconnect from what Main Street is feeling with what's going on in the stock market. But somehow the stock market eases people. The stock market kind of like is a massage for, you know, your average person that says, hey, you know, things are okay. Things are getting back on track. But when stock market is red, it's that fear and panic. And I guess it gives people that hope that things will turn around and things will be better.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I just think that so much of this has to do with the record participation in the stock market, which is, I feel it's largely a good thing. I mean, getting people into the stock market, especially young people, you know, anybody who's played with a compound interest calculator knows that the earlier you invest, you know, the better off that you are. But again, I think it's important to encourage people to seek out some educational resources when it comes to investing. Because I think when you have apps out there where you open your phone, you can open a brokerage account in 5 minutes, fund the account and be investing later that day. When the barriers are so low, you get a lot of people that have no idea what it is that they're doing. So for example, I had to cover on my channel, I covered what happened with Hertz stock. You know, they filed for bankruptcy. And then after their bankruptcy filing, that stock surged over 1,000%. And if you look at statistics, it was largely Robinhood traders who had new positions in Hertz. Now, nothing against Robinhood, but it's just the low barrier to entry app where people can just zip in there and begin investing. So I did a video talking about Hertz stock. I explained that when companies go bankrupt, usually equity investors get nothing because after the debt investors are paid off, there's nothing left. And I had, like, for example, this one person sent me a message on Instagram and they were like, I bought Hertz stock. I didn't know why it was so cheap. I didn't know they were going bankrupt. I had no idea what that even means. So I think you have a lot of people just buying stuff based on, hey, I recognize that name. Okay, I'm going to buy that, having no real understanding of why it is at that price. Why would a stock like Hertz be, you know, 50 cents, 75 cents per share? And so that's what worries me. If you can take some time to maybe learn about index fund investing or blue chip stocks or dividend aristocrats, it's great to be investing, you know, having more people participating. But when those participants are buying Hertz when it's bankrupt, that's when it's not so much an advantage, I think.
What are your thoughts on gold? I mean, you're talking about all these people investing in the market. Millennials largely don't care about gold. That's a baby boomer thing. It's people who've, you know, seen some volatility and, you know,
yeah, I crises. Think so.
But, you know, what I am anticipating to happen is there to be significant inflation based on the fallout that we're going to see with, you know, all the printing that we're doing. And mm-hmm. eventually millennials are going to have a wake up moment and saying, hey, this is cash. Like Ray Dalio said, cash is trash. So what are your mm-hmm. thoughts on this?
Yeah, so I actually personally don't invest in gold. I have some friends who do, oddly enough, who are my age. So there are some, you know, millennials out there buying gold, but it's not a lot of people. I personally don't know much about gold. I understand people like it because you can't make more of it. Personally, I actually like Bitcoin over gold. So I have a good amount of money in my crypto portfolio, which is almost all Bitcoin. I would prefer that personally over investment in gold, but that's just based on, you know, my own personal preference and research I've done. But I do certainly understand where people are coming from, where especially at a time when there's record high, you know, amounts of stimulus and money just being pumped into the economy, we want something that can't be messed with, you know, like the dollar. And so I do agree with you completely about, you, like you said, their cash is trash. That's my thought process too. I'm in this point right now too, where, like I said, a couple of months ago, I was very excited about the stock market. I was pumping money left and right into stocks, mostly, like I said, blue chips, dividend payers, those dividend aristocrats. Now I'm getting to the point where I'm like looking around and I'm like, what am I going to do with my money? I don't know where to put it. I don't like the valuations of these companies. So I did put some money into tech because I'm very bullish on tech. But other than that, I'm at a point where I'm kind of struggling with, okay, what? I can't leave my money sitting here in my bank account earning less than inflation. It's just going to sit here and deteriorate. You know, does that mean that I buy real estate? Do I go buy Bitcoin? It's really tough to determine where to put your money right now, because I'm not seeing many deals at all in the stock market. So, you know, if people are moving into real estate, gold, and things like that, I think, and I know we're seeing increases in gold prices as people are looking for that as, you know, during times of uncertainty, they flee into gold for certainty or something that's tangible or something that can't be manipulated. I don't think among millennials it's as popular, but I think Bitcoin is kind of that gold for millennials, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. And that's something we've covered a lot here at Crush the Street. We believe that gold and Bitcoin are allies. So we like it a lot, and it's been good to us getting in very early. But I will follow up then. I mean, you wrote the book on how to make $1,000 a month on Airbnbs, real estate.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Given the current environment, people being locked down and, you know, the massive shakeup we've seen in the economy, what are your thoughts on real estate at the moment? And I mean, Airbnbs, isn't that, that's a situation right now, which we've now seen a game changer with this pandemic and people wanting to social distance and be very scared to go into someone else's house to various degrees.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, as far as real estate goes, I'm not a big real estate investor. I own my own home, and it's actually a multifamily property. So I have a couple of tenants in my property. That's the extent of my real estate investing, which is the house hacking. Beyond that, I don't know that I'll buy more real estate because of what I saw happen with friends of mine and the stress they were under related to the eviction freezes, eviction bans, rent not coming in. You know, it's very scary. I didn't experience it, but even just talking to people, you know, having your mortgages and knowing, okay, I don't know how many people are going to pay rent this month and I can't do anything about it. So this is kind of like, again, another unprecedented time here where as much as people push real estate investing and buying up as many properties as possible, well, the more properties you own, the larger your overhead is. And so me personally, I was very fortunate because neither of my tenants had any loss of income and they continued to pay me, which was phenomenal. And I had said to them, if you need to work out any deal, let me know, but they didn't take me up on that. But I know like a friend of mine who had more like 30 or 40 units, he had roughly a third not sending in rent. Now he was still able to cover his mortgage and expenses, but personally that would just make me nervous. If I know that a third of my tenants aren't paying rent, I have no means of evicting them. Not that you would anyway during a pandemic, but it's just scary. And like personally, that would just stress me out. I like real estate as an investment. I actually have a lot of money in crowdfunded real estate. I think that's an interesting alternative, and it's another way to diversify out of the stock market. So that's where I have, you know, a sizable amount of money as well. But yeah, as far as Airbnb goes, this was a game changer. And that's another example here of this dangerous house of cards that was built. You had a lot of these Airbnb hosts that didn't actually own the properties. They were just basically doing Airbnb rental arbitrage, which is where, let's say, for example, I rent a apartment and my rent is $1,000 per month. If I get permission from the landlord to operate that as an Airbnb and I furnish it and I'm able to make $2,000 per month on Airbnb, well, assuming I'm cleaning it myself, et cetera, I'm making $2,000 and then paying $1,000 in rent, and I'm making the difference. So a lot of people did that, but the issue is that it scaled so much quicker than buying physical real estate, because if you own the property, you gotta put 25% down. If you're buying a duplex for $100,000, it's $25,000. So in order to save up enough money to buy the next duplex, you gotta save $25,000. That takes a long time. But when you're doing this rental arbitrage with Airbnb, your cost of getting in there is, okay, first month rent, security deposit, and furnishing, which could be $3,000-$4,000. So all of a sudden, it scales much quicker than actually buying the property. But the problem becomes when nobody is showing up at your bookings and you have 15 apartments that you're renting out and you have no money coming in, you're screwed. So I heard a lot of people that ran into the situation because it was just like, it's kind of like the situation with the cruise lines. Nobody ever planned for the number zero with the cruise lines. None of these Airbnb hosts ever planned for near 0% occupancy with their Airbnbs because nobody ever plans for a global pandemic like this. So I think you're going to see Airbnb continue for sure. And people are still going to do it as a means of, you know, side income. But I don't know that you're going to see people taking it to the scale that they did with this rental arbitrage.
Isn't that insane, though? It really goes to show the sentiment of confidence there is in the market. I mean, that's one barometer of it. And I can tell you, if I ever had an appetite to open a restaurant, I know they're extremely difficult to run. My goodness, just the thought of opening one up now in Austin, Texas, or, you know, Los Angeles, California. I mean, we have the precedent of, you know, just an extreme lockdown taking place. I mean, you don't even know if you're able to pay your bills and if you're going to be open or not. And it's crazy when you think about it. When the government says someone does not have to pay their rent, the person who's expecting that rent, that could be their livelihood, right? I mean, that's the food on the table for their kids. And, you know, it's almost, it's just a picking and choosing of who can thrive, who can succeed, who can fail. And it's just such a mismanagement. And that's where, for me, I have a real problem with the confidence in the underlying fundamentals of the economy, which I know we keep going back to. But yeah, maybe just some follow-up thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I think it's just an issue there where, again, the difference between Main Street and what is going on with Wall Street and the stock market. And I see it too. I mean, I live right near Saratoga Springs, New York, where they have the racetrack season here. And that is the moneymaker for Saratoga Springs. It's very expensive to rent and have a business in Saratoga. And for the most part, these businesses lose money for 9 months out of the year, or they break even. And then track season, that is where they make their money. And so this year they announced that they're going to be running the track without any spectators. It's going to be like they run the races, but you tune in remotely. And that is literally, I think, going to destroy the local economy, because you're not going to have people coming in, at least in my opinion. I don't feel people are going to come in to watch the races from their hotel rooms or from sports bars. And so I think there's just such this deviation here where, okay, you could easily find yourself in a vacuum right now if you're somebody who solely looks at the stock market as an indicator of the overall economy, or you aren't involved in, you know, service business or anything like that, or travel or leisure. If you work remotely, if you've quarantined yourself, you don't know what's going on around you. And I honestly am going to say I have fallen into that myself as well, because I, you know, work from home. It's a strictly online business. I have almost no overhead. So I'm not seeing this stuff firsthand. But like, for example, today I go to my barber shop and he's talking, oh, this restaurant closed and this store closed. And I'm like, these are like stores and restaurants that have been around for 15, 20 years shutting their doors. And it's like, when you think about the contrast there between what I'm seeing in terms of looking at the stock market all day and my own business compared to somebody who's had this restaurant 15 years closing the doors, it's like the contrast there is wild. And I just think, like we said, it's just not being reflected in the stock market. And these numbers are just not things that people are seeing. And it really just taking a walk down your street and seeing what businesses are there, what businesses are not. And yeah, like you said too, about the restaurant thing, I had that thought myself too, with the success rate of restaurants being so low, then this happens. I can't imagine opening a restaurant after this. It's wild.
Yeah. And it's interesting to see how, which companies end up benefiting from this. You know, one thing I always like to talk about is just the ripple effects, because so many times we think our job or our situation, our investments are in this moat, but because you look around, you're like, hey, we got good income here. We're financially stable here. You know, you got all these barriers, which is prudent. I think that's great. But my goodness, with this pandemic, I mean, so many layers of people's moats were completely destroyed and came from absolutely out of left field. Nobody really even thought of it. And I mean, you mentioned sports. I'm a fan of golf. And, you know, there's sports right now, which may not come back for a very long time, or, you know, to various different degrees. But, you know, a social distance sport, you know, arguably is golf. You know, they were one of the first to come back, and, you know, they're benefiting from all the ad revenues and all the things that they're doing because they got to come back first. And again, nothing that you could have predicted, you know, prior to this pandemic. This is something completely arbitrary, you know, and it's just crazy to think about how different things can look a month or two down the line, which is the importance of prudence. So, Ryan, I want to give you an opportunity here to close out and maybe share some thoughts on that. You know, the thought of being prudent and smart with your money and prepared for just the unknowns going forward, in your closing thoughts here.
Yeah, absolutely. So on that, what I want to say is, in terms of finding opportunities in the market, I think a lot of people rely on whether they're looking for stock advice from a friend, maybe they're looking on different online publications for stock ideas or things like that. But some of the best investments that I've made come from, like, literally, like I said, walk down your street, look around. What is going on around you? More people are using hand sanitizer. More people are wearing masks, plastic barriers in grocery stores. Oh, all of businesses are closed, yet Walmart, Walgreens, CVS, they remain open. Think about things like that and how that could affect revenues for these companies. One of the best investments I made earlier this year was Lowe's. I looked at this and I said, Lowe's stock, Dividend Aristocrat, they're staying open. Everyone's cooped up in their home. They're going to be doing home improvements and projects. So, I mean, everyone has wins and losses. I'm not saying that that's any profound thought that I had. Other people had it, but I looked at it and I said, okay, Lowe's is staying open. They're busier than ever when I go in there. I'm going to buy some stock. So in terms of figuring out, you know, investments to make, I would think about what is going to change forever. There's going to be more cleaning protocols. Maybe music venues are a thing of the past. Who knows? You just think about what is going to change forever based on these current circumstances. The use of telemed services surged like 1,000%, I think. So rather than going to the doctor, you did over the phone with your doctor or through Skype or Zoom. So things like that, that just kind of changed forever. And in a lot of ways, this pandemic was a trial by fire for so many different things. The work from home business model, and things like that, where people may not have been ready for, but they had no choice. So that's basically what I would recommend. If you're looking for, you know, ways to invest right now, think about what is going to change forever based on this current pandemic, and don't focus so much on like, what are the hot companies today? Like, well, where are these companies going to be at down the road, and when what's going to be more popular? Do you think 5 years from now, there's going to be more people, you know, shopping at JCPenney and in malls, or is that really not going to happen? Are we going to crowd into movie theaters and, you know, eat popcorn? Is it something we're going to do, or are we going to sit home and stream it? Just kind of think about things like that, and not so much focus on, you know, the Wall Street aspect of it. Just look at your own home. What are you using? What are you doing? And what's going on around you in your immediate area?
Ryan, great words of advice. If people want to learn more about you, the work you do, the success you're having, obviously, I mean, be part of that and just kind of support you, where can they go and what can they expect to find?
Sure thing. So, I mean, if you want to learn more about, you know, investing and maybe some of these different money-making ideas like Airbnb you had mentioned, I have a lot of great resources on my YouTube channel, which is just Ryan Scribner. As far as, you know, investing, if you're looking for resources about investing in the stock market, maybe you're looking to learn about some of these different investing platforms and apps, I would recommend my blog, investingsimple.com. And I always mention this too, if you guys have any questions for me, I always try my best to respond to Instagram messages. So if you want to, feel free to shoot me a DM and just say, hey, you know, Ryan, I heard you on Crush the Street and wanted to ask you about this. I do my best to answer those questions because obviously you've invested your time into listening to this episode, and I'd like to return the favor by, you know, answering some questions for you.
Well, you're a good guy, Ryan. Thank you so much for coming on Crush the Street with me today and sharing your knowledge.
Thanks for having me. Take it easy.